word of God in school.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Now, we were going to have the most wonderful guest today, one of my favorite people, and that is Bill Federer. And Bill has run for Congress twice against Dick Gephardt in the St. Louis region. And now that Gephardt is going to run for president and is withdrawn from his congressional seat, why, Bill Federer was going to run again, and he was going to be our special guest here. And he was going to tell us the story of George Washington Carver, which is a wonderful story of a young boy who was born into slavery and whose parents were killed and his whole family was killed when he was, you know, just 7 or 8 years of age. And yet, of course, he was able to get himself educated and, with the helps of both blacks and whites, was able to go on and become a college professor. And then, of course, gave up a very successful teaching position to go to Tuskegee, to the Tuskegee Institute, to deal and work with the blacks and try to have an impact on agriculture in the southern part of the United States. And, of course, cotton was the standard crop that had been grown there for so many years. But cotton depletes the soil, and eventually, why, of course, the soil won't grow cotton or won't grow it well. And so he determined that, of course, if you use things like peanuts or other legumes, why, of course, you could replenish the soil, get nitrogen back in the soil. And so he encouraged the blacks and white farmers in the South to begin planting peanuts. And then, of course, they had to find something to do with the peanuts. There was only a certain amount you could do. I mean, they used peanuts for cattle feed. Well, of course, he devised hundreds of things that you could do with peanuts and pecans. And it's really a wonderful story. Bill Federer has written a book about it, but you're not going to hear about it from me because I've only read part of the book. And so I guess we're just going to have open lines there and ask you, if you're out in the listening audience, to tell us what you think about what's going on, what you think about the war with Iraq. If you support the war with Iraq, we'd like to hear your reasons. If you don't support the war with Iraq, we'd like to hear your reasons as well. So give us a call here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, the president has said, we don't need the United Nations permission to go ahead. I would like to have their permission, but we're going to go ahead whether we need to have their permission or not. Unfortunately, of course, France has come out strongly against the war. Germany has come out against the war. The British people are against the war. Even Tony Blair, has had such a backlash against himself that he's beginning to sort of waffle on the war, saying, well, maybe we ought to wait until we have more in the way of inspection there. But, of course, really, whether they find weapons of mass destruction or not is not the issue. If they find weapons of mass destruction, I suspect that Saddam Hussein will simply give them up. Saddam doesn't want a war with the United States because he knows there's no way he can possibly win. And, of course, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, George Bush has gotten himself into a very difficult position. Because if he goes ahead in defiance of the United Nations and attacks Iraq, why, he could be considered at some future date and time a war criminal for responsible for the deaths of the people. And so right now, of course, he's, I think, going to hold back. It's going to be very interesting to hear what he says on the State of the Union message tonight. And I think we will want to hear that. And then, of course, he has some other incredible programs. I mean, here is supposedly a conservative president who's going to push, medicines for anybody in Medicare. And, of course, what he's saying is you're going to have to help the government's going to have to buy the prescriptions for senior citizens. And I would say, why in heaven's name would a Republican want to encourage socialized medicine? Because that's exactly what it is. Now, why do we have a problem with the price of the pharmaceuticals here in the United States? Why can you buy pharmaceuticals at a quarter of the price in Canada that you can buy them for here in America? Why, ladies and gentlemen, we're simply being manipulated. This is what it's all about, is manipulation of the American people, twisting their arm until they cry uncle and say, yes, we want more socialized medicine, which is only going to lead to healthcare rationing and eventually a two-tier medical system, which is what we had before this whole thing began. But now you have the federal government has control over the quality and the way medicine is practiced, and it can go after any doctor it wants to. It doesn't have to have any reasons for it. It can spend millions or tens of millions of dollars to persecute some poor doctor who they have targeted for destruction, and they do this sort of thing. Now, yes, there are some people out there who have taken advantage of the system, and of course they should be excommunicated and never allowed to participate in it again. But even better still, we ought to just do away with the system because, of course, there is no problem facing healthcare today that a new government program won't make ever so much worse. And people don't understand that under the guise, oh, we're here from the government, we want to help senior citizens. You have to understand we didn't have a crisis in healthcare delivery until the government got involved in healthcare. I practiced medicine back in those days. I remember when I came to Santa Cruz, an office visit was $4. And, it cost $400 for a nailing of a hip, a fracture, and medical fees were certainly were reasonable at the time. Those were the days where a man could work, only one person would have to work in the family, and you could buy a house, and people would have a house and have a car. And, of course, thanks to all of the government programs that they've created, why now the husband and wife have to both work. People are living on credit cards and credit debt, and, of course, they've created a monster. They've created a system of Medicare and Social Security that is bankrupt. And they keep telling you it's not, but it is. These systems do not work. They have not worked in any country they've ever been tried. And, of course, as the people age and as they kill off more of the unborn children, eventually these programs face bankruptcy, and that's what's going to happen in America. And they know exactly what's going to happen. They just don't want the American people to understand that there is no Social Security fund. The government has taken your money and spent it. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I certainly want to mention to you that if you feel tired in the morning, if you feel tired in the afternoon, and you feel you need more in the way of energy, then if you will give serious consideration to actually getting Be Alive Royal Jelly products. I've used them for 8 to 10 years, so I can speak from first-hand experience, and I believe that they really do increase energy level, and we tried discontinuing it, and we went right back on them in very, very short order. It's a natural nutrition product. It's what the queen bee eats. It will not give you a lift like an amphetamine does. In fact, you're going to have to take it for 3 months before you're going to see a good deal of improvement. But let me suggest that you call 866-233-7500. That's 866-233-7500 and order the Royal Jelly, Be Alive Royal Jelly products. They're sold with a money-back guarantee, and at the end of 3 months, if you're not entirely satisfied, they'll give you your money back. And that's a hard deal to pass up. And I really think it'll help you, especially in times like this, to have more energy. And then, of course, if you're one of those people who knows what garlic does, garlic has wonderful medicinal properties. Certainly, it lowers blood pressure, it lowers cholesterol. It seems really to be very beneficial as far as fighting off colds and other infections. What we're talking about is Alamax. It's the pure product, that it's the Allicin product, Allicin molecule. It's available by calling 866-405-4000. That's 866-405-4000. Be Alive products are available by calling 866-233-7500. Why does it call those the companies? Do both of them help us to stay on the air as we expand our coverage across America from sea to shining sea? The Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and a few people have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and we've got both Bart and Mark calling from Aptos, but we've also got Bill Federer on the line, so I'm going to ask Bart and Mark to forgive us. We're going to have to go directly to Bill Federer. And hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Oh, great, Dr. Stan. I'm sorry I'm a little late here, but great to be with you.
Well, I tell you what, I'm just glad that you were able to come on with us. So why don't you, of course, I've already introduced you. I've already introduced the book, The Story of George Washington Carver. So why don't you tell this amazing story? You actually had the opportunity to go through a lot of his papers and manuscripts, didn't you?
Yes, and went down to Tuskegee Institute there in Alabama, and also Diamond Grove, Missouri, which is where his birthplace is. It's actually a national memorial. It was the first national memorial of a birthplace other than a U.S. president. And George Washington Carver was born around 1864, 1865. And we don't know exactly the date because he was a slave when he was born. And his father was killed in a log hauling accident. His dad had belonged to the farm next door. And George and his mother were kidnapped. And this was at the end of the Civil War. There were bushwhackers in southwestern Missouri. And, Jesse James and people like that would wander the hills. They kept up their vigilante type of activities. And one time they came to the Carver farm. Moses and Susan Carver were German immigrants. And they had a little farm.
They were whites, weren't they?
Yes, they were white. And they would, these bushwhackers would, they hung Moses Carver up by his thumbs on a tree and tried to get him to tell where he hid his treasure, because a lot of times farmers would hide their treasure somewhere other than in their house, and he didn't have any treasure. And so they got frustrated with him, and they decided to take Mary and the baby boy George. Mary was the black mother, and George was obviously George Washington Carver. And so the next day, Moses Carver sent off a friend with his best horse, and they caught up with these bushwhackers in northern Arkansas, and they said, well, tie the horse to the fence and leave, and we'll bring back the mom and the kid. Well, they tie the horse up and leave, and when they come back, there's no mom. All there is lying in a blanket, dying of whooping cough, is little baby George. And they bring him back to the Carvers. And Moses and Susan Carver were childless. They didn't have children. And so they raised George along with his other brother, Jim, as their own children. And Jim was healthy, and so he worked out with Moses in the fields. But George stayed in the cabin and helped Susan Carver with the cooking and cleaning and mending and crocheting and, all the womanly type tasks as they were considered back then. And but he gained an education. He learned how to read and write, and his recreation time was going out into the field in the woods around the house and collecting little weeds and replanting them and making his own little garden. And he became quite a good green thumb, and even other farmers in the area would consult George on how to nurse some of their plants back to health. And he sort of got a reputation as a plant doctor. Well, one of the trips into Neosho, and my mom is from Neosho, Missouri, so that's why I grew up learning about Carver. One of the trips into Neosho, he noticed, to get supplies, he noticed a line of African-American children in front of a house. And he said, "What's that?" And he said, "Well, that's a school for Negro children." And so he said, "I want to go there." And so they talked about it, and they always encouraged him to learn. So he said goodbye to them and went into Neosho and slept in the loft of a barn and did odd jobs for people around town at 11 years old, believe it or not, and earned money to pay his tuition to go to this school. Well, he was there about a year and a half, and then he learned all that schoolmaster Foster could teach him. He had been taken in by Aunt Mariah and Uncle Andy Watkins, and they gave him his first Bible, which he cherished throughout his life. But after the time in Neosho, he went to Fort Scott, Kansas, and lived in a lean-to behind a stagecoach depot. And then he cooked for a wealthy family in town and went to high school and witnessed a lynching and fled and went to several different towns in Kansas and finally finished his high school and applied to college. He wrote one letter. He said, "Here is when I learned that my only brother, Jim, had died of smallpox, and I never felt so alone in the world, but I trusted God and pushed on ahead." And, you know, you just picture how lonely he must have felt. And but he got accepted into Highland College and went back to Neosho, showed them his acceptance letter and was so proud. And then that fall, he showed up at college, and the president looks up from his desk and sees him and says, "Oh, I'm sorry, there's been a terrible mistake." Well, they don't let him in because of his race. And so, dejected, he goes to western Kansas and homesteads. And that's where if you homesteaded for a few years, you could get some land. And he was there about a year and a half, and the people there loved him. He would play his accordion at their dances, and his paintings were well-liked. And he later said, "Here is where I saw the subject of my famous painting, the Yucca, Y-U-C-C-A, and this painting got an honorable mention in the 1893 Chicago World's Fair." So Carver was a very good artist in his own right. After his time in western Kansas, he went to Kansas City and learned stenography and telegraph and worked for the Union Telegraph Company. Then he went to Winterset, Iowa, and was the head cook at a hotel. And he writes in his book, he says, "One evening I went to a white church and sat in the rear of the house. The next day, a man called on me at my work and said his wife wanted me to come by and sing for him." So that evening, Carver goes by the house and sings for, and finds out that this was a lady in the choir, and she said that Carver's fine voice had attracted her at church, and she noticed how well he sang. And so he would come by every week, and they fell in love with him. That was John and Helen Milholland, and they became his best and warmest friends, and they made arrangements for him to go to Simpson College and study art and music. Well, he goes to Simpson College. Again, they have an empty building on campus, and he opens up a laundry, and he washes the other students' clothes. At one point, he said, "I never asked anybody for support. I literally wanted to earn my own living." You know, you think of the work ethic that this young man had. And so he painted, and his art teacher was Miss Etta Budd. And she noticed how intricately he painted leaves and the plants. And she said, "Well, you must really like plants." And he said, "Yes." And so she encouraged him to study agriculture, saying that he could probably help more people with agriculture than with painting. And so her father taught at Iowa State College of Agriculture, which is now just Iowa State. And so he arrived there, and there wasn't enough rooms in the dorm. And he said that before this could be made an issue because of his race, that the head of the agricultural department, whose name was James Wilson, took him in. And he slept in the office of the head of the department. James Wilson let him live right in his office. And Then he goes on to explain, he says, Wilson, the Honorable James Wilson, that name is sacred to me. He said that he taught a Sunday school class in which every student would have enrolled if he were allowed, and the class grew so large that he devised a method to split it, and Carver said that he was one of the ones that had been with him the longest, so he was graduated out to start another class, but after 2 or 3 months, they were all back again. And he promised them that never again would he try to split the class because the students loved being there so much. And another one of his, and James Wilson went on to become the United States Secretary of Agriculture. Another one of Carver's professors became U.S. Secretary of Agriculture was Henry Wallace. And Henry Wallace's son, Carver, not only got his bachelor's degree, but his master's degree, and then Carver was offered a very prestigious position there at the college. And Carver is the assistant botanist in charge of the laboratories and the greenhouses. Well, one of his students was Henry C. Wallace, who went on to become U.S. Secretary of Agriculture and Vice President for FDR. So here, Carver is rubbing shoulders with some very influential people, you know, one of them being the Vice President of the United States. Then he gets a letter, and the letter is from Booker T. Washington down in Tuskegee, and it's 1896, and Booker T. Washington says, Tuskegee Institute seeks to provide an education, a means of survival for those who attend. Our students are often poor, starving. They travel miles of torn roads and across years of poverty. We teach them to read and write, but words cannot fill stomachs. They need to learn how to plant and harvest crops. And I love this last part of his letter. He said, I cannot offer you money, position, or fame. The first two you have, the last from the place you now occupy, you will no doubt achieve. These things I now ask you to give up. And in their place, I offer you work, hard, hard work, the challenge of bringing a people from degradation, poverty, and waste into full manhood. Signed, Booker T. Washington.
Well, we'll be right back with this amazing story of George Washington Carver in just a moment. But right now, I want to mention to our listeners that Radio Liberty does carry things like Miracle 2 soap products. And let me tell you that certainly this is one of the best things we ever did was begin to carry them. Now, we can't make any claims for Miracle 2 products other than to tell you they're excellent soap. A lot of our listeners claim that they've helped with all sorts of things. But all I can tell you is that people are happy with them. It's amazing that people who use the Miracle 2 products come back again and again for them. And certainly I've used the moisturizing soap and the gel for a number of years, and I really believe that they have, I believe that they do things beyond what soap ordinarily does, but you're just going to have to get them and try them if you'd like. And they're available simply by calling 1-800-544-8927. You can get an introductory package which contains the soap, the moisturizing soap, the neutralizer, which some people seems to feel helps them with their heartburn. Certainly you can get the lotion and the gel. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then I want to mention also that we do carry Monopoly. It's a board game played like Monopoly. And, of course, in 16 to 20 hours, you can begin to reprogram a child's brain and undo all the harm that has been done in the public educational system so that children can begin to read phonetically and spell phonetically and pronounce words phonetically. Basically, it's 5 board games, 2 bonus games, and 2 extra books that we throw in. Most of these programs are $300 or $400 to teach phonics. This one's $139.95. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Phonopoly. I don't think that you'd be sorry that you did. Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our 4-tape set,
Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest is Bill Federer, who I... Bill, have you decided whether you're going to run for Congress yet or not?
We're seriously thinking about it, but we haven't made the final decision yet.
Well, I hope that when you do, you let us know, and we can get you on all of our programs and at least let people know and say what they're interested in getting a man who's dedicated his life to the Lord and to doing what's right into Congress. Why, maybe we can engender some support for you. But you were telling us this amazing story of this gentleman, and he's been asked by Booker T. Washington to forego prosperity and position to come to down into the South to work, to help the people there. So what happens?
Well, George Washington Carver writes a letter back to Booker T. And he says, "I look forward to doing all I can through Christ who strengtheneth me to better the condition of our people." And you know, you think of it here, Carver is mentioning a scripture, or mentioning Christ in the very letter that he agrees to go.
Bill, are you there? Well, I don't know what happened. It looks like we may have lost
contact
with Bill, but Bill, are you there? We lost him. I'm going to ask our producer to call him back again. But of course, George Washington Carver gives up a comfortable position at a white college to go into the South, because he thinks here he can serve. And, of course, he looks to his Lord, Jesus Christ, for the strength to do what is right. And I think that this is the dominant message that you get reading this wonderful book on George Washington Carver. It's an easy book to read, but I think it's a book that everybody should read. At one time, of course, we used to read books like this about the men who were dedicated to the Lord, who had an impact on society. They don't allow these in our schools anymore because, of course, they don't want you to know that at one time America was a Christian nation, and we lost Bill. So if we could get Bill back just one more time, I don't know what's going on there, but again, we've lost him, and he seems to be... I would hate to think that there was some sort of an organized effort to keep you from hearing the rest of the story of George Washington Carver, but we'll have Bill back here in just a moment to pick up the story. Of course, what happens is he goes into the South, and now, of course, the South is pretty much impoverished, and especially at a black university. And, of course, at that time, the Tuskegee Institute was sort of the end of no place. It was run by Booker T. Washington, who was really an amazing, amazing individual, also, had come out of slavery, and, of course, a brilliant individual who held no bitterness about slavery. He didn't want compensation for slavery. He just wanted to make a better life for himself and for his people. And so let's pick up the story there, and let's hope that we don't get cut off again. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, Carver writes a letter to Booker T. Washington, and he said, "I look forward to doing all I can through Christ who strengtheneth me to better the condition of our people." And I think, you know, how wonderful it is that in the very letter that he agrees to go to Tuskegee, that he mentions his Christian faith. And but the book I put together is a collection of the letters that Carver wrote throughout his life. And am I still on?
Yes, you are. Go ahead. You're
okay.
Doing fine.
I apologize. His phones have been acting up. But he led a Bible study at Tuskegee in 1907. He writes the letter to Booker T. And he says, about 3 months ago, six or seven students came in my office and Bible study. And I consented to do that. And he says, "We're studying the book of Genesis." And he said, "Thought this information may be helpful to you when you speak on the religious aspect of the school." But one of the things I thought fascinating is when he went down to Tuskegee, he found out that the cotton crop had depleted the soil so badly that every year you grow cotton, it produces less and less because it pulls all the nutrients out of the soil. And then the boll weevil, a little insect, had swept through, and it had destroyed what was left of the crop. And so when carbon goes down there, it's just basically, you know, the farmers are in dire straits. So he teaches them agricultural techniques of rotating crops and fertilization and irrigation. But then he taught them how to plant legumes. Legumes are peanuts, sweet potatoes, soybeans. They're more or less like roots. They have a little fungus that grows on the roots that basically puts nitrogen back into the soil. And most fertilizers are basically just nitrogen. And so when they do this, they get this abundant peanut crop. And up until that time, they used peanuts primarily for horse feed. And so Carver decided that the farmers were growing this, that he wanted to produce a market for them. So he went into his laboratory, and he created over 300 uses for the peanut, from cosmetic cream to diesel fuel to asphalt grease to nitroglycerin to shaving cream, and of course peanut brittle and peanut butter and all the kinds of foods. One time he was invited to speak to Congress, the United Peanut Growers Association. You know, as the years went by, they had all the farmers growing peanuts. They asked Carver to go to Washington, D.C. and address Congress and ask for a tariff on imported peanuts to help the domestically, locally grown peanuts. They were importing peanuts from China cheaper than what these farmers could grow the peanuts for. And China's always seems to be in the news there. So Carver goes up there, and they give him 10 minutes to speak. He shows up at the end of the day, and he was having trouble getting in the Capitol because the doorman thought he was a street person, you know. But he gets in, and he starts pulling out these things that he's made out of the peanuts. And they were so enthralled that they gave him as much time as he wanted, and he talked for an hour and 45 minutes. And it's just so interesting. And am I still on?
Yes, you sure are. Go ahead. Okay. No, I'm not saying anything. I'm fascinated by what you have to say, and I don't think anybody wants to hear me, so you go ahead.
Okay. I apologize. I'm going to be talking off the air, and nobody listens. Anyway, the first thing Carver says, he says, if you go to the first chapter of Genesis, you can see what God intended when he said, "Behold, I've given you every herb-bearing seed. To you it shall be meat." He says, I believe the Lord meant this literally, that it shall be meat. He says, the sweet potato and the soybean and the peanut have all the nutrients necessary for life. And so, you know, we go to maybe some of those burger stores, you know, hamburger places, and we say, well, that's not a real burger. That's a soy burger, you know. And we sort of look down on it. Well, Carver's the one who came up with the ability to take a soybean and make it into the texture and flavor of meat. I mean, it was a genius, you know. When he's done talking to Congress, the one congressman says, Dr. Carver, how did you learn all these things? He said, from an old book. He said, what old book? He said, the Bible. He said, does the Bible tell about peanuts? He goes, no, sir, it tells about the God who made the peanut. I asked him to show me what to do with the peanut, and he did. And, I mean, here Carver gives the glory to God for this. And then he speaks in 1924 in New York City at the Collegiate Church to the Women's Board of Domestic Missions, and he says, no books ever go into my laboratory. The thing I am to do and the way of doing it is revealed to me the moment God inspires me. He says, without God to draw aside the curtain, I would be helpless. That was a nice talk, but the New York Times got a hold of that talk and wrote a damning editorial saying, real scientists never speak that way. Well, it's just Carver writes back to the editor of the New York Times, November 24th, 1924, and he says, my dear sir, I'm so sorry that there's been such a grave misunderstanding about what I meant by divine inspiration. This is never at a variance with information. As a matter of fact, the more information one has, the more inspiration he can have. And Carver begins to quote the scriptures, where it says, study to show thyself approved, the workman that needeth not be ashamed. You know, then he quotes Galatians, where it says, neither was I taught it by man, but it was by revelation of Jesus Christ. And he said, these two verses are enough to cluster my remarks around. He says, I have been educated at Iowa State College and hold two degrees in agricultural science. I've studied at Simpson College. He goes on to explain that, two of his professors are U.S. Secretaries of Agriculture, and all the list 100 professors that he studied under or studied their materials, including Madame Curie, and you know, who discovered radiology and so forth. And then he gets done with all of this very impressive resume, and he says, "I still believe in inspiration." And he says, "In your fine city in New York, I went to the market and I saw roots and tubers that were imported from Trinidad, and I immediately had ideas as to experiments that I could do to develop products from them." And he said, "To my knowledge, no one has ever done these experiments with these roots before. Therefore, I had to trust inspiration." And anyway, but that little controversy of having the media slam him and him having to defend himself, he began to get letters from all around the world. And people would write letters to the editor of the New York Times supporting him, and it became a real buzz in the community and in the country. And there's pictures that I put in my book of Carver sitting in front of a table with like a mountain of letters, and they were people and supporting him and encouraging him, and then he was getting letters from Mahatma Gandhi. He corresponded with him in India, and even Joseph Stalin sent him letters inviting him to Russia. He turned him down, obviously. He said, "My students will go around the world, but I won't." He was getting job offers from Henry Ford because he learned how to take a milkweed and extract rubber out of it. And Ford was looking for another source of rubber for his automobiles. He got job offers from Thomas Edison at Menlo Park. He said, "Look, you can have the finest laboratory with all the equipment." And Carver turned it down and said, "No, I'm called to help my people here in the South." And when he died, his image was put on a postage stamp and on a 50-cent piece coin, him and Booker T. Washington. And in 1960, they dedicated a nuclear submarine to him called the USS George Washington Carver. The motto was strength through knowledge. And Carver was such a humble man. In the book, I put these different quotes where he talks about never having the religion of hate, which poisons the body and the soul. But he says to have the religion of love, the golden rule way, which is the Jesus way. And he continually talks about Christ. He says, "I wish my students would follow Jesus hourly and daily and momently." Another place I love, and I put this letter in here, in 1931, he wrote a letter to Miss Isabel Coleman, and he tells how he got converted. And he said,
I'm going to let you save that till we get back here, because I don't want to have to interrupt you halfway through, and we're going to have to go to a break here. But how wonderful it is to find a man who will publicly proclaim his faith, and how rare it is today to have people sincerely proclaim it in public. And, of course, I fear that some people who do are simply using it as a political tool. But we're going to be back here in just a few moments with Bill Federer, and we'll be talking about his book, George Washington Carver. And, of course, we'll tell you how to get the book. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I have to mention that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will agree that we will give you a different slant on things that you'll get most places. We hope that many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do it. We do 5 hours every weekday, and our program, weekend program, I think goes to 34 or 35 stations now. And, of course, we hope to gradually increase our coverage, but we are dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs and support us on a regular basis to help us do what we do. So if you believe, of course, that America is involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, if you believe that our freedom is in jeopardy, we hope that many of you will decide right now to join the Radio Liberty family. And you do that by calling 1-800-5-448-927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, and our January newsletter certainly is dealing with the threat of biological warfare in America as a result of our determination of our leaders to go to war in Iraq, that battle may be fought here in America as well. Give us a call if you'd like a copy of the January newsletter or the December newsletter. It certainly deals with the occult foundations of our economic system. But give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Go to our website at Radio Liberty. Tell others about our programs. Tell them about RadioLiberty.com and encourage them to listen to our programs. And then, of course, we would love to hear from you. Again, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America truly is at war today. Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris Bill has written a number of books. His book, America's God and Country, if you don't have a copy of it, you really need to have it, because, of course, it goes into the background of the Christian foundation of this once great nation. The things that they don't teach in school today, the facts that they've removed from the textbooks and from the history books. Why? Because they wanted to convert us from a Christian to a atheist and now into a pagan nation. They've known exactly what they were doing. And who did it? Well, it's the Brotherhood of Darkness, and you can get my book that goes into that, but you need to get Bill's book, America's God and Country, and then he has a wonderful CD, and of course, that actually is America's God and Country, and it's got so many other things on it, including the Bible and the dictionary, and of course, it's got many, many more quotations than in the book. And then, of course, he has another CD, and we carry all of these things. It's got 1,000 books on it, the really important books that you should read. He has a wonderful book on St. Patrick. Of course, he has this book on George Washington Carver, which you will want to get, and we carry all of these books. How much is the book on George Washington Carver?
It's $15 for the paperback and $20 for the hardback.
Okay, fine. Well, we'll be carrying the paperback here, and so you'll be able to get that by calling our number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. But this is an inspiring story for children, and we certainly recommend it to you. And the story of St. Patrick, it's really the story of Santa Claus. Really is an amazing, amazing story, and we recommend all of these books to you. You're writing a new book, aren't you, Bill?
Yes, so there's another one called The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on American Law.
Is that one available yet?
Yes, it is. And I take every one of the Ten Commandments and trace how it impacted law. For example, the Fourth Commandment, keep holy the Sabbath. Well, in 1682, in Pennsylvania Constitution, it has a line that says, if any business shall fall on the Sunday, which is commonly called the Lord's Day, that business shall be deferred until the next day. Well, so we have a precedent of no business done on the Sunday because it's the Lord's Day. Well, the U.S. Constitution in 1787 says the president has so many days to sign a bill, Sunday's accepted before the bill becomes law. So the U.S. Constitution somehow regards Sunday as special. No business is done on that day. Well, you look at the previous constitutions because it was the Lord's Day. But that's just one example of how one of the Ten Commandments influenced the law, and the book is just filled full of that. It's a great resource. I wrote it for Matt Staver and different attorneys who are having Ten Commandment cases before the federal court where they're trying to strip the Ten Commandments from the public places, and they asked me to prepare a prime evidence of the Ten Commandments deserve a part as a public display because they have affected our laws.
Well, we'll have to go ahead and get you on and do that program, but we'll let you finish up your story of George Washington Carver, and then we'll have to get you back. Of course, I want to get you on all of our programs with the story of George Washington Carver, and then, of course, we want to get you back, if you're willing to, and tell us about the Ten Commandments and how they were reflected in the laws of our land, and totally contrary to the evil men who sit on the Supreme Court who knew exactly what they were doing when, of course, they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools because they knew it would destroy this country. There are people who hate America, and you must understand that. The Supreme Court justices, every time they open their session, the choir comes in and says, God save the United States in this august court. So if they open their sessions with mention of God, why can't they mention it in school? Because they want the minds and the hearts and the souls of your children. And when you understand that, you'll understand how it can be that they can outlaw the Ten Commandments. And yet if you go into this, in the room where the Supreme Court sits, and you look up at the ceiling, there's a marble beam there that supports the ceiling, and there engraved in there is, of course, a copy of the replica of the Ten Commandments. Let's get back to George Washington Carver.
Well, you brought up a great point, Stan, because in the 1920s, there was a split in the black community. Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver were on one side saying the answer to the race problem was to work hard, get an education, make a contribution to society, and you'd be respected. Well, the other side was W.E.B. Du Bois, from which came Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, and they said, we want reparations. We want to be paid back. We demand this and demand that. And that's the side that's got a hold of the media today. And there's been this feeling that, you know, has given birth to welfare and people that have been on welfare for several generations. But George Washington Carver is a perfect role model because here he didn't have a dad. His dad had died. His mom was kidnapped, so he was an orphan. But he had this thirst for knowledge, and he had this industrious attitude that he would always find something to do. He'd open a laundry. He'd become a cook. He'd take care of people's animals, just anything. I put in this book all these letters that he wrote throughout his life where he mentions his faith. And here's one in 1931 he wrote to Miss Isabel Coleman, Greensboro, North Carolina. He says, I was just a mere boy when converted, hardly 10 years old. There isn't much to the story. God just came into my heart one afternoon while I was alone in the loft of our big barn while I was shelling corn to be carried to the mill. A dear little white boy, one of our neighbors about my age, came by one Saturday morning, and in talking and playing, he told me he was going to Sunday school tomorrow morning. I was eager to know what a Sunday school was. He said they sang hymns and prayed. I asked him what prayer was and what they said. I do not remember what he told me, only remember that as soon as he left, I climbed into the loft, knelt down by the barrel of corn, and prayed as best I could. I do not remember what I said, only recall that I felt so good that I prayed several times before I quit. I thought, how precious. I mean, you can just picture that in your mind. Carver was such a humble man and such a strong Christian. And he corresponded with great leaders in the country, judges and, the head of the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, and but a lot of the YMCAs, because he spoke at the Young Men's Christian Associations all across the country. And one of the people he corresponded with was a James Harwick. And this is what he wrote in 1928. He said, as a very small boy exploring the almost virgin woods of the old Carver place, I had the impression that someone had been there just ahead of me. Things were so orderly, so clean, so harmoniously beautiful. A few years later, in the same woods, I had the understanding of what this boyish impression meant, because I was practically overwhelmed by some great presence. Not only had someone been there, someone was there. Years later, when I read the scripture, in him we live and move and have our being, I knew what the writer meant. Never since have I been without the consciousness of the great Creator speaking to me. And he goes on to say, man needed a purpose, a mission to keep him alive. He could be God's co-worker. My attitude toward life was also my attitude toward science. And he says, Jesus said that one must be born again, must become as a little child. There must be no laziness, no fear, no stubbornness to keep him from his duty. I like that, no laziness, you know. And then he goes on to say, my purpose must be God's purpose to increase the welfare and happiness of his people. Nature will not permit a vacuum. It will be filled with something. Human need is really a great spiritual vacuum which God seeks to fill. With one hand in the hand of a fellow man in need and the other in the hand of Christ, Christ could get across the vacuum, and I became an agent. Then the passage, I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me, came to have real meaning. As I worked on projects which fulfilled a real human need, forces were working through me which amazed me. I would often go to sleep at night with an apparent insoluble problem. When I awoke, the answer was there. Why then should we who believe in Christ be so surprised at what God can do with a willing man in a laboratory? Some things must be baffling to the critic who has never been born again. And you know, Stan, when I talk to chaplains that work in prisons, and unfortunately the majority of the people in prison are African American, and they say how the Muslims have been sending clerics into the prison to make converts, telling them that Christianity is the white man's religion and Islam is the black man's religion. And I thought, you know, it's so important to highlight George Washington Carver and Booker T. Washington and people like that, because here were African Americans that were great leaders and great scientists and statesmen who were Christian. And it's important to realize that Christianity is the white man's, black man's, yellow man's, red man's, every man's religion. And it's more than a religion. It's a relationship with God through Jesus Christ. And also, I found that, you know, Black History Month for years has sort of, in my opinion, been hijacked by an agenda, political agenda, sort of left-leaning, like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. And I thought, well, you know, rather than shy away from it, let's talk about Black History Month, and let's talk about godly Christian black men and women and the contributions they made. I mean, Carver started a $500 million peanut industry. Matter of fact, the last 10 years of his life, he was a pioneer in physical therapy. He developed an oil called phenol, and he would, when the patients would come who had atrophied limbs from polio, which was a real scourge back in those days, even FDR, you know, the president had it, and so Carver would pour the oil on and massage their atrophied limbs. And this is one of the letters he wrote in 1934. He says, thank you very much for your beautiful card. He says, our patients have usurped almost all my spare time. And I have patients who come to me on crutches who are now walking 6 miles without tiring, one man without either cane. And he says, my last patient today was one of the sweetest little five-year-old boys. 3 months ago, they had to carry him into the room, being paralyzed from the waist down. When I finished the massage today, much to our astonishment, he dressed himself, stood up, and walked across the room without any support. He says, I say that these are our patients because I feel that your prayers help make this possible. I have before me 2,020 letters from people across the country asking for treatment. It's marvelous to see what God is doing.
Well, it's a wonderful, wonderful story, Bill, and thank you so very much for being our guest today, and we hope to get you back again, and we'll talk about the Ten Commandments, and I hope many of our listeners will want to get that book on George Washington Carver. It's the sort of thing our kids, our children should be reading today. God bless you. Thank you so much.
God bless you and all the listeners.
Bye-bye. Well, Bill Fetter is one of my favorite guests. I hope he's one of your favorite guests as well, and please pray for America. Pray for revival, pray for our ministers, pray for our leaders, and well, please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so, until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
Where was he?
Well, he was somewhere. He was on his life. I was left messages all over. Dave found another number for him. I found